This is Selling It Like It Is. And now, here's your host, Stefan Lubinsky.
And welcome to another episode of Selling It Like It Is. As always, I am your host, Stefan Lubinsky. And today we're going to be talking about a pretty interesting subject called whiteboard selling. And with me is my guest today, Corey Summers, who's the co-founder and the chief marketing officer for a company, believe it or not, called whiteboardselling.com. And Corey has an extensive background in sales and marketing and channel enablement. And his background was as a corporate reseller in channel segments with BMC Software. He went to Cal Berkeley. So he's a very smart guy. He's worked for very big companies. But what we're interested in is talking to him about what he's doing today with whiteboardselling.com. Corey, welcome to Selling It Like It Is. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, appreciate that, Stefan, the opportunity.
Oh, great. Well, listen, we've got people already scratching their head wondering what on earth whiteboard selling is. So let me kind of tee up where my mind was at when I came upon you guys, and then we'll go from there. I am driven crazy by the dependence that salespeople have on PowerPoint. And it really is like nails on a chalkboard to watch somebody read a PowerPoint. I mean, it just drives me absolutely crazy. And I can't begin to tell you that I think it's much more prevalent of a poor presentation using PowerPoint than I've ever kind of walked away and said, wow, that was a really great presentation. So I saw when I came across whiteboard selling, and I don't remember what Google search I was doing or what I was doing, but to me, it just sung out that you could cut the cord of PowerPoint and these other presentation types of software, and you could express yourself in an entirely different way, engage the audience in an entirely different way, and at the end of the day, do what we're all trying to do, which is to achieve more sales. Is my head in the right place, Corey?
Absolutely, Stefan. And we fundamentally believe that there are many more effective ways to present. You've heard terms like death by PowerPoint. I think, in fact, if you do a Google search on the images, Google images, death by PowerPoint, you'll find some good comic relief. Now, that said, we do believe that there is a time and place for slides, just not in that first or second a critical interaction with your customer and prospect. And it really is about something we call knowledge ownership. And PowerPoint defeats that. When you're relying on slide bullets to prop you up, you may not even have written those bullets. You may not have authored them. And Stefan, you probably heard, in a slide presentation, I'll get to that in five slides. Right?
Right.
I didn't write that slide, that's not the most current version of that slide. That's the kind of trouble you get into with PowerPoint. And when I talk about knowledge ownership, and I don't care what business it's in, I mean, any type of sales, your customer is going to have so much more confidence in you if you have ownership of that knowledge. And my partner, David Jenkins, likes to say, you'll never write something on the whiteboard that's not in your head. And whether it's a whiteboard, a tablet PC over a WebEx or something like that, we like to tell our customers to, the salespeople we train, we like to tell them to take their customers to lunch at one of those restaurants, with the butcher paper on
yeah.
the table.
Yeah.
And have that interactive conversation. And at the end of that meeting, you can rip off that square that you've presented on, and they probably grab the pen from you and say, well, here's how we do it. And then they can take that with them. So it's just, you're right. It's a much more effective way. And I was a sales consultant in a past life, and I can't tell you the number of shirts I soaked through from that hot projector fan blowing right into my face.
Right.
Right. I mean, think about it. It's a dark room. Usually have to close the blinds. It's sleep inducing. Right, people. Because it's dark, people are popping off their BlackBerries. So, for all the reasons you said, for that first or second meeting, it's just not an effective.
But I think moreover, there's a few things, right? So in sales, one of the things you're looking to do is to stand out from your competition, your competition's salespeople, the competition's product and services and so forth. So if every other Tom, Dick, and Harry is engaging the customer with the marketing department's pre-done PowerPoint bullshit, then you haven't exactly started off by capturing anybody's imagination or attention. I think that if you can walk into a room, and I really love this idea of knowledge ownership, which I think is not the case necessarily when you've got a PowerPoint. I think you're relying on that PowerPoint, and you may not have all the answers per se. Maybe I'm projecting there, but at the end of the day, if you have the confidence to go in and present on a blank slate and immediately interact with that customer and incorporate into that blank slate their question, comment, concern, objection, whatever, instantly, instead of, as you pointed out earlier, you know, I'll be getting to that, which is beyond frustrating. If I'm the prospect, I don't really want to hear, I'll be getting to that. I want to get the answer to my question. In fact, you're on my brain schedule, not the other way around. So, tell me a little bit about how this came about, because obviously, like everybody else, you were in big corporate America, and I would assume that although you created a lot of your own PowerPoints, some were also handed to you. At what point, what's the background story here?
Well, I was, throughout my career, it's ironic, I actually owe my career to PowerPoint very early on, because I was training salespeople back when I got my start at Oracle, and I would create these just elaborate presentation, you know, with all the animations and, you know, mostly also competitive, you know, presentations. How do you compete against, at the time it was, you know, competing against IBM or SQL Server or whatever it was, and we'd get a whole room of salespeople together and the lights would go down and, you know, it was effective, but it really didn't sink in. They'd walk out of the room and they would, you know, it wouldn't sink in. They, you know, that's a passive way of learning. You know, that's the whole other side of this. One of the things we believe in is, you know, active learning, actually getting people in role plays and learning the whiteboards that way. So, you know, just seeing it in action, you know, seeing that that's not the most effective way and trying things out as my career progressed and my partner, David Jenkins, as well. And, you know, my strength really is in the scaling out the enablement and the training piece, and Dave had the, you know, the whiteboard. Dave was a huge evangelist of the whiteboard at BMC Software. It was affectionately called the spider diagram because it had, you know, kind of the center circle with all these capabilities hanging off of it. And it actually looked like a spider.
Right.
And we came together, and he had that real core domain knowledge, and I had that, you know, ability to figure out how to scale out that training to thousands of people, literally. And that's what we've done for our customers. We've trained over 10,000 people, field-facing people in 20 different countries over that. And so that's, you know, you've got to have a way not only to build that story, but to scale it out. But I want to address one thing you said earlier. You made a key point, Stefan, and that is the interactivity of this. PowerPoint is, by definition, not interactive, because you've got nothing to capture what your customer is telling you, right? And when you're at a whiteboard, it's much more intimate, it's much more interactive. You're able, as you just said, to capture what they're saying. A whiteboard, any type of sales presentation, should be as much a discovery session, a qualification session, as it should be, you know, show up and throw up. Here are my products, here are my services. Right, which PowerPoint runs itself to. So having that, you know, the best thing that can happen is your customer gets up, grabs the pen from you, and starts adding to the diagram. At that point, you can forecast the deal at that point, because what do you have then? You have a shared vision.
And I think it also presents, there's one group of people that would jump up and grab the marker. There's another group of people that would like to, but don't have the chutzpah to just jump up. But I would, and I don't know, maybe you recommend this, but I would actually teach salespeople to offer the pen. And that's another key thing that doesn't happen in a lot of these sales meetings, is that this kinetic interactivity. So if I could literally say to a prospect, here's the marker, go up there and draw for me what you're talking about, or draw around what I've just drawn, and now physically involve them in the conversation. I mean, look, we all know that we learn and associate and make relationships based on those three primary senses of, you know, auditory, visual, and kinetic or kinesthetic. And so this is like the only one where you literally can become kinesthetic in the sales process by handing them a marker and getting them involved. And I think that's incredibly powerful.
Completely agree. I love that idea of having we call it an interaction point, or many interaction points in the whiteboard. A whiteboard is a story. It's a narrative. You're going to interact with your customer with that story. You have flexibility to go off script, but it is a core framework or core story. Now, throughout that whiteboard, there are interaction points, planned interaction points, where you're going to, you know, ask those qualifying questions and bring out that pain and bring out that, you know, discover. I like this idea of at some point, show me exactly what you're thinking. So that's I like that idea.
You can have it. No charge, Corey. So let's talk about some of the other things. First of all, let's talk a little bit about who is the typical client for whiteboard selling, because you deal with really big clients. So I want an understanding of who they are and what problem do they know they're facing. You know, why do they seek you out? What do they know that they've got a problem with that they say, we need to have these guys come over here?
Yeah, you know, it's such a broad cross-section of industries, of size, of customer. You know, my background is in high tech, and there's such a demand right now. You said it earlier, it's a competitive differentiator. So everyone's looking for a way to differentiate in this economy. And so, you know, if you're coming in with a whiteboard and your competition is dragging in a projector, or, you know, oh, you ask the customer, make sure you put this in a room with a projector, right? And sometimes it's an extra thing, a burden on them. So it is a differentiator, but it can differentiate any business whatsoever. And so, for example, high tech, manufacturing, business services, financial services. I mean, I remember times, Stefan, where my insurance broker came to my house, you know, when they bring over the all those marketing slicks, and they bring over their big screen laptop, and they pop it open, and he was trying to sell me whole life insurance. And he showed me all these charts and graphs and all these, spreadsheets about, you know, where I'd be. And I said, you know what, this is not the way to sell me whole life insurance. Let me show you. And I actually pulled out a sheet of paper, and I said, what if you tried this? What if you tried, okay, here's where you are now, Corey, what are your goals? Let's draw it out and, you know, even hand me the pen and say, okay, where do you want to be on this graph, right, in terms of the amount of money at retirement? So this concept can be used in any industry that has a complex product with a smart buyer who needs, you know, in a competitive market. That's really what it is, those three things. Complex product or service, educated buyer, smart buyer. This is not a commodity. This is not something you use for a commodity. You know, you're not going to sell a widget with this thing, right? With this approach.
I don't know. So it's funny that you say that, Corey, because I think I might push the envelope on that.
When I say widget, I mean like a nut or bolt. Right?
I got you. Right. There's no explanation needed.
I mean, yeah, it's not going to be, all right, I'm going to sell you something you find at Office Depot Home Depot, right? This is something that, you know, needs to be explained.
Right. I think that's the key.
What is the value?
If you have something to explain, because, listen, I've got small business people listening to this, and when you say complex, I mean, we're not suggesting, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a loan officer, if you're a realtor, a CPA, a chiropractor, You have a value proposition that has some layer of complexity to it. I mean, it should, because you're trying to argue to a sophisticated group of consumers why they should do business with you, given that in their geographic area, there's probably 15 to 20 similar providers, right? So whatever your story is, that might have nothing to do with your product or service. Might have to do with you, might have to do with the way in which you interact with the client, or some special added bonus stuff you do because that what you do is exactly like the guy down the street. But that explanation in of itself requires some level of explanation. And now I've figured out where I found you guys. It was reading Dan Rohn's book, Back of the Napkin. And it's just this concept that regardless of what you're explaining, people prefer to consume their information, if possible, graphically. I know this because of my involvement in the video marketing space. And now, did you know this, Corey, that video searches are almost at par now with just your typical written word search?
Right.
So people would prefer images, ladies and gentlemen. It's why people are watching video. That's just images to the nth degree, right? People are using the number two search engine out there right now today. The number two search engine is YouTube. It's not Yahoo, and it's not Bing, and and it's not Ask. So let's take that back. You know, put this from third gear into first and second gear. And what you're talking about are images. And Back of the Napkin, I recommend you guys read Dan Rohn's book. In fact, just as a quick aside, just the power of social networking. Now it's all kind of coming into my college drug induced haze. I wrote on Twitter something about Dan Rohn's book and the power of using images for sales, and you were paying attention to Twitter, whether you were using TweetScan or search.twitter or whatever, and obviously looking for people that were either mentioning that book or mentioning something that's relevant to your business, and you contacted me or put a reply to my tweet and said something, which got me to go to your website, and I said, oh my God, I had no idea this existed, so power of social media for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, our Twittering so far, even just about a month of it, has produced quite a bit of activity for us. It's just a tremendous mechanism. I think people underestimate it or think that it's for teenagers following Ashton Kutcher, right? But it's really a great business tool. You mentioned Dan Rohn earlier. We love what he does. I mean, basically the idea of visual thinking or taking an idea and visualizing it. Even before he published that book, we were focused on the same issue or the same concept, but specifically related to enabling a sales force to, in a very scalable way, in a very hard-hitting way, use these whiteboard tools to get out and sell solutions. And you made a great point earlier. It's not about products and features and functions, right? It's about a story, a narrative, right? And it could be about you as a small business person or your differentiator or how you're going to solve that business challenge, reduce cost, reduce risk, for that individual. How is your solution better than the competition? I mean, you could be selling roofing. I met a guy out in Boston in an oyster bar, actually, and we talked, and I said, what do you do? And he said, well, I own a roofing company. And I said, who are your customers? And he said, well, my customers are mostly commercial. We do a lot of government and schools and things like that. And I said, schools? Great. Every school's got a whiteboard. Go out there and visit those folks and talk about what makes you different. And I asked him, what's your differentiator? He said, we're a service company. We have superior customer service, and here's why. And I sat there, and we took a sheet of paper, and we actually built a whiteboard together. And 2 hours later, 3 hours later, he had a whiteboard about how his roofing company is differentiated. So you're right. It doesn't, it's not about what it is. It's about telling a story. Right, and weaving in who have you helped before, what's the proven success, hard numbers, right, cost reduction, all of those things important.
Yeah, and the thing is, psychologically speaking, the reason this is very powerful, ladies and gentlemen, is that when you are talking to somebody and talking to them about the certain benefits of the features or functions or your service or whatever it is, while you're walking through your value proposition as eloquently as you may be doing it, there are certain milestones, there are certain kind of key points. Well, the problem when you do this verbally is that one of those key points that was said two or three points ago is not necessarily available as that building block in their mind as much as you would like it. And the reason is it's newer information for them, so it doesn't sit as well on the mental shelf as it does with you. Your familiarity with the information makes it very accessible and tangible, and it's just right there for you. So when new information is given to you, you process it, you understand it, but you can't necessarily just grab it and put it on the shelf and access it as easily. So while you're making your building block argument, which I think most sales should be, are building blocks, you can't really tie it all together as nicely for them as you can when you do it on a whiteboard. Because think about this. As I made my initial point, I drew something to represent that point. And as I make my next point and draw the bridge or the line or the whatever, that graphical, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but that graphical representation on the whiteboard helps my brain keep fresh what that building block was and helps me follow what your sales argument is. I use the word argument like an attorney would, because I think salespeople should build a case like an attorney. Any merit to what I've said, Corey, or am I just burning time?
No, I mean, absolutely. You, when you're, you know, not only is it active learning. So imagine you're a salesperson and you're in a role play and you're, you know, 5 or 6 hours or a full day, and you're actually role playing and drawing out that whiteboard, you know, repeatedly and progressively, so that at the end of that day, you can walk out and the very next day pitch that to your customer prospect. It's not only about that active learning. Like you said, once you own that information and you're in front of the customer, you are going to be more conversant. You're going to be more confident. You're going to be able to improvise. And you're going to be more engaging, right, when you're actually up there, as you say, and it's a key point that you're making, as you're drawing out, it is an active way of engaging. And so, by definition, more your personality is going to come out. You're going to have that intimate, direct interaction. The lights are going to be on in the room. You know, it's just going to be such a more positive experience. And, you know, there's plenty of studies that show, you know, I don't know what they say, Stefan, right? After a presentation, you might remember the first few slides and the last few.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You might, right? Or you might retain 10 or 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about a whiteboard is that you can, a lot of things you can do with it when you're done with it. You know, a lot of customers will write save on it, and you'll come back 3 weeks later. It's still there, and not only is it still there, they've used that whiteboard to pitch to someone up the ladder in the company, or they've used it to, remember what you're talking about. But also, you can always take a picture of that digital photo and then send that back. So mm-hmm. That whiteboard is an artifact that you can leave there. So I think you're making all the good points about what we're talking about.
So, Corey, let's talk a little bit about best practices here. I think we've sold people on why PowerPoints suck. And by the way, there are some really, really pragmatic things here. As a professional speaker, I'll tell you that more than once, internet connections in rooms, if what I was doing was going to be multimedia, was problematic. Granted, PowerPoint doesn't need an internet connection, but there's any number of things that could happen with your laptop or with the projector, and all of those things, by the way, have happened to me, or that there was an audio component, all of these different things, and so they are stressful, they are embarrassing, they affect the flow of your presentation, and now you're scrambling to figure something out, and you might end up doing a really bad job of relying on a flip chart or a whiteboard because you don't know how to properly use this tool, which is ultimately so much more powerful than the PowerPoint, right? Because think about this, guys. You cannot, on the fly, adjust your PowerPoint to whatever it is that that audience is taking issue with or is excited about or whatever. I mean, you know, and that's really a key thing here is I think all of my salespeople listening know that, you know, listen, you might be selling to the same audience, but at the end of the day, everybody's got different issues that they're either excited about or turned off about and so forth. And so the successful salespeople are able to go with that flow of the conversation. But technically speaking, these PowerPoint presentations can be a real nightmare. So working with something that, that just requires a marker is or a napkin. And we keep saying whiteboard, and I should be clear that this concept doesn't mean whiteboard. This concept means blackboard, whiteboard, piece of paper. It's whatever it is that you can write and draw on, a wall, you know, as long as you own that wall, so forth. But let's talk about some best practices, Corey. So I'm down, I'm in. We've got all the time we want on the show. But at the end of the day, talk to my small business people about giving them some idea how to get started and what they can do without taking one of your big courses for big companies.
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do is sit down with yourself or, you know, with your business partners and get some basics down, right? You know, what is the business value you're providing? One of the rules we have in whiteboarding you make a good point. It doesn't matter where it is. I've done the pitch on an air sickness bag on an airplane, right? I'm in 1A. My potential client's in 1B. They say, well, what do you do? I pull that out. You make a good point there. The first thing you need to really understand is what is the core business value. And the rule that we have is no product names or feature names or things like that. You should avoid that and focus on capabilities. Right? What are the capabilities? There's a big difference there because when you hear those product names, it just mucks things up, if you will. That's the first thing. What is the business value? Who is the audience naturally, and what are they? What are their pains? Right? What are the trends in the industry? It's always good to understand. Show your knowledge of the industry. Here's some of the trends that we're seeing. Right? The guy with the roofing. I asked him, what's new in roofing? Right? What are the new materials and things that are being used or the new approaches? And what's your view on it? That really tells your customer to know exactly what's going on, right? Because you've got to build that confidence. And then it's a matter of really thinking about, okay, now who are my competitors and what are the key differentiators? And really honing in on those. You've got to know what those differentiators are and which ones are really defensible or really make you stand out. Right. Sure, you want to level the playing field and say, yes, we do all these things that these other folks do, but here's really what, makes us different. I read a book once called The Discipline of Market Leaders, written by a couple of Harvard guys. And their premise was every company has got to pick one discipline of excellence out of three. And those disciplines are product excellence, operational excellence, and customer intimacy, right? So you look at customer intimacy, that's Nordstrom. You look at product excellence, that's Nike. You look at operational excellence, that's McDonald's. You really need to know what is your discipline of excellence and then make sure that comes across in your pitch. So those are the three or four things. And then you can sit down and say, okay, what is the story I want to tell? This is really about telling a story of another customer you help. And what their challenge was at the beginning. And think of it this way. What is the current state? Where were they before? Your solution. What were the challenges they were facing? Right? And then you move into, okay, where do they want to go? Right? And what was that day in the life that and then you can bring in, okay, once you've set up those challenges, now let me tell you how our solution, here's the day, same day, but with our solution in place. So the more you can work that story into it, that's critical. So really those are the things you want to do. You want to get up front and really get a spreadsheet or a document or a piece of paper and get all those things out, and then take all those ingredients, right, that I talked about and then bake them into a story. that usually won't, you know, will take you about 10 to 15 minutes to get through without any questions. And you'll be surprised. You'll get into a discussion, and it could take an hour with interaction and with them jumping in. But you want to get it down to about 10 or 15 minutes straight through without any questions or anything. And then you want to practice. And I had a, one of our reps, he was up in Alaska, he presented to his dog. He put his dog in a corner, and he presented to his dog. It doesn't matter who it is, it could be your imaginary friend, but practice in role. Very important to practice that in role before you go out and use it. So I hope, I know that's a little long-winded, but that...
No, that was great. That's what we want. We want to be as in-depth as possible, and I appreciate that. Right. Are there symbols... What, Corey?
No, I was going to say, and then there are a whole bunch of best practices in terms of how to stand at the whiteboard and use color and things of that nature.
Well, I was going to say, are there some symbols? In terms of whiteboard language or symbology that is across the board so that I don't look like a schmuck if I were in front of some whiteboard savvy people and I used a triangle when clearly that was when you use a square. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you make a great point, and thanks for bringing that up. It is, if your whiteboard is just a list of bullets, you might as well use PowerPoint. I mean, you could say it's a little better. But you need to have some visual flair to it, right? And you've got to have, lines and arcs and visual pieces, squares and different, arrows and process, right? You're talking about a story. You're talking about a day in the life or whatever it is, your before and after, or, even at a high level, what are the capabilities? You should have a competitive whiteboard. On the left, you have, here's how it's typically done by these other folks. On the right hand, here's how we do it. There's a whole bunch of different frameworks. But you need to think of, when you're representing a word or a capability, what's a cool little picture, right? We have one customer that, it's about tsunamis of data, right? And what do we use? We use a wave, right? A little wave. Or we have another customer that where one challenge is securing data in when people are out on vacation with their laptops. So what do we draw? We draw a little island or a little island with a palm tree, right? Or we've got a little security wall or barbed wire or whatever it is. You've got to translate that into some kind of image, right? If it's going faster, doing something faster, could be a highway with mountains in the background, and then you change the speed limit from 55 to 80, right, as you go through. So you got to think imagery. And if you ever need help with that, go on to Microsoft Clipart and type, Google search Microsoft Clipart, it will come up, and type in a little island, island or desert island or whatever it is, and you'll come up with little images, and then you can just take those and translate those into, hand drawn.
Well, that's one of the things I want people to understand is that you're not in any way, shape, or form suggesting, because people listening like, oh, great, now I need to have artistic abilities, and they're going to be very concerned and apprehensive about getting up in front of people and having their really crappy drawings. So let's be clear, stick drawings are fine. If you're drawing a person, it's a stick drawing, that's fine. If you need it to symbolize that it's a girl, draw long hair on it. Right? I mean, so we're not saying that if you have to draw mountains in the background that you're, you got to be an artist.
You can be as simple as you want. Actually, the diagrams I'm talking about are think of it when you're back at school, right? Back in third or fourth grade or wherever it is, and you're just drawing, right? I don't know about you, but I was a big doodler, right, in school, Stefan?
Yeah, I'm doodling now.
Doodling, right? And I used to do, you do all kinds of stuff. Think about it that way. You're just doodling, right? Okay,
yeah.
Some concept comes in your head, and, practice, once you get into it, I mean, I'm no artist, and when we started out, right, I said, let me just start visualizing some of these concepts. And we use a tablet PC. You don't have to, by no means, you need to use a tablet PC, but you can use one of those little bamboo tablets $100 tablets on your computer, and you can start creating these icons and saving them.
That's a great point. Let's talk about that for a second, Corey. So listen, a lot of people these days, such a great point, a lot of people these days do not meet face-to-face anymore.
Correct.
And yet, for those of you listening, and I hope you haven't clicked off this far because you thought, I don't meet face-to-face, and I guess I should have brought this up at the beginning. But the power of whiteboard can be shared today with technology. And there are, and I don't know them, and you'll mention who they are in a second, but I know that there are, I know Dabbleboard is one, there are websites that will enable you to have this blank tablet that we're talking about. And if you use, whether it's a tablet PC or product you mentioned was Bamboo, that's guys like a mouse pad with a pen, okay? And you draw on your mouse pad and it translates to the screen. So if you're using a GoToMeeting or a WebEx or a similar screen sharing technology, you can practice everything that we're talking about. Is that right, Corey?
It really is, and I got to tell you, it's the most effective. It is the most effective, one of the most effective, powerful ways to do this. You're not going to meet face-to-face with the travel budgets getting cut. I mean, some of our biggest clients are just no more travel. And what we're talking about now, in fact, we do all of our initial sales calls over WebEx with a tablet PC or a Bamboo tablet. And ironically enough, I use PowerPoint. PowerPoint on the tablet comes with built-in drawing features. If you buy a tablet PC with XP or Office, or Vista, excuse me, and you have Microsoft Office, guess what? It comes with built-in drawing capabilities. You know, the computer comes with a little pen. You go into PowerPoint, you put it in the play mode. Lower left-hand corner, you get a whole menu of drawing features, pens, highlighters, whatever you want. You can then get on a WebEx, share that. And again, you said not just WebEx. You know, Adobe makes a great product, Adobe Connect. Recommend that one. You mentioned some others. Fuse Meetings, really great product they've got. Test them out, right? Each one will have different pluses and minuses, but the key is that you're going to be able to draw. Once your customer connects in, they're going to see that screen. We even build a little whiteboard background that looks like a whiteboard graphic that we put into the slide master. So when people see it, they're like, holy cow, what are you doing right now? What are you using?
That's very cool.
And let me tell you this. WebEx has a feature where you can actually test the who is alt-tabbing or switching over to another application like Outlook during your presentation. And we've done some anecdotal research and found that if you're just doing a PowerPoint over WebEx webinar, you lose 50% of your audience to another application like email. When you use the whiteboard model, because it's so engaging, you lose only 10%.
Okay, so again, that's like a key point to be writing down for the three people left listening. It's critical that you write that down. So you're doing number one, if you are not somehow connecting with your clients with a visual component, then you're screwed. Let's go back to Mehrabian's Law, a UCLA study. I don't remember when, 70s, 80s. Dr. Mehrabian, basically, I think they call it the 55-38-7 rule. And it says that of what is spoken or told to people, only 7% is remembered from the actual words themselves. 38% of the feeling that they got from it came from a tone of voice, okay? So of what they took away of the message, 7% came from the words, 38% came from your tone of voice, and 55% came from visual cues. That means body language, facial primarily, but also other body parts. So, ladies and gentlemen, if all you've got is the phone, okay, you're making your business on the phone, you're stuck in 7% land. Okay, so look that up. Look up Dr. Mehrabian. I'm not making this stuff up. So now let's think about what Corey just shared with us. Okay, I'm using my head. I'm using some form of screen share technology. I've got my PowerPoint up because, you know, until listening to Selling It Like It Is and Stefan and Corey, I thought I was doing the right thing. And you are. You're doing better than just calling them on the phone. And you're engaging your customer. But turns out, with this amazing feature on WebEx, it's the first time I've ever heard it. You can see I'm excited. Turns out, that now you can find out whether or not people are actually watching your PowerPoint, and they're not. They're flipping out, clicking off, and they're meaning when you lose 50%, they can still hear you. Okay, so what they've said to you, ladies and gentlemen, those 50% is A, your PowerPoint sucks, is unengaging and boring. B, you're probably reading it, so I don't need to look at it. Let me say that again. You're probably reading it, so I don't need to look at it. Okay? I can't tell you how many salespeople do that. What's the point of your PowerPoint? You're telling me that you're reading the bullet points. Okay? So those people are saying, unengaging, you're probably reading it, I don't need, I'll just turn you into a radio show. And meanwhile, my brain, if I've clicked over to email, what's happening? I'm not listening to you while I might be hearing you, delineate that distinction there. I might hear you blathering away while I'm responding to an email, but very few of you are capable of actually listening and logging that information and processing it while you respond to an email, right? So what Corey's saying is, here's why this happens. By making it a whiteboard, you see, they cannot get the complete picture by just listening to you. You see, they could with the PowerPoint. I can get the whole picture. You're just talking the PowerPoint. I'm going to click off. I'm going to do emails now. And I'll think that I'm listening to you in the background, so I'm getting nothing out of this. Instead, by the nature of the creation of the graphic in real time with the words, you can only get the full story by looking at it. And so only 10%, which is the same 10% of the schmucks that really didn't want to hear what you had to say in the first place anyway, they log off. And you keep 90%. Yep. That's an incredible statistic. What a wonderful insight. As we
just one last thing. You make a good point about people just listening. If you're going to do that, if you're going to do a webinar with PowerPoint, I would just do a podcast. Let them download the radio, like you're doing. Great radio show. Let them download it. At least they're working out at the gym. They got that on their iPod. And they're more engaged there because they don't have email in front of them.
Yeah, no, it's totally possible. Although when I'm working out, the last thing I'm going to do is listen to somebody talk to me about, their application, or, Tube Mogul telling me about their amazing syndication possibilities while I'm sitting there working out. The good news is, Corey, I don't work out, and so I don't have to bring something with me to listen. And I'll share that with you later. That's my retirement plan. I sat down with a certified financial professional, and he had this great piece of software that basically showed how much money I would have to save up if I wanted to live out my life comfortably. And I decided that number was unattainable. So I changed the graph by greatly lowering my expected age there, and I mean really, really bringing that limit down. And turns out, if you lower it enough, Corey, you don't need to save anything. So that's the plan I'm on. And so that involves a heavy smoking of cigars, absolute abstaining from any kind of exercise, and really increasing any kind of carcinogen intake possible.
Well, your headshot on Twitter looks pretty, you look pretty
healthy.
You don't look like you look healthy.
Yeah. Well, that was that's the power of
less is a picture from 20 years ago.
No, it's just the power of the Splash Media Studios in Dallas. They can make anybody look good. So Corey, as we wrap this up, this has been a great piece. What are any nuggets that you want to leave with people that are starting to see the light here when it comes to whiteboard? And I also want to plug and replug, whiteboardselling.com is the website. If any of the seven people that make up my global audience happen to work for a larger company, then Whiteboard Selling is definitely a place you need to look in terms of having them come and having them come and increase your sales. Let's just break it down like that. And by the way, let me give you another plug. I've spoken with Corey at length before because I was really excited about this concept. And what I quickly figured out was that the real power, again, if you're a large company listening, maybe as powerful, if not more powerful, than the training of your people to express themselves in a much more engaging, interactive, useful, all the things that we've talked about way, the real power is these two guys, David and Corey, come in, and they really help you develop your story. And that's probably where most of these companies fall down. They're really good at making their product or service. They really know their space. But you know what they're not? They're not sales storytellers. That's just not what they do. And so that can be seen when their people go out there and just do the Ben Franklin close or whatever it is they're doing, or their PowerPoints and putting people into comas. So one of maybe just as powerful as teaching the methodology is really helping these companies craft the story for the audience that then these people can go out and do. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, absolutely. The two kind of closing remarks I'd make is that for those, you know, small businesses that want to get started with this, there's really no barrier to do it. You know, sit down, like I said, with that spreadsheet or sheet of paper, you know, figure out your core differentiators, your value, who's your audience, and get that stuff down. What are the proven successes you've had? Quantify those proven successes. If you are a larger company and you need to scale out an enablement plan on how to get your whole distribution channel, not just your direct folks, but your channel, your inside people, your marketing people, all of them on the same page, on a consistent message that is compelling, confident, and consistent, we come in and help understand your strategy. We come up with a whiteboard, you know, either at a corporate level or at a solution-specific level, and then we move into enabling all of those field-facing folks. So, for example, Symantec, you know, they needed a way to coherently articulate their corporate story, you know, after acquiring a number of companies, and so we helped them with that. So it's not just about for a larger company. Not just about whipping something up. You really have to understand what's going on, like you said, translating that into a compelling story, a hard-hitting story. So, we love what we do. We've had a great impact for our customers. It's been a cultural change in the way people sell at our customers. And, it's very exciting stuff.
I think it is too. I think it's great, and I think it makes this much more interesting and human and engaging. And at the end of the day, that's really what we want to get a sense of, are the people that we're working with. I think my last thought will be that one of the great things that a whiteboard does is it gives me a better sense about how your brain works, how bright you are, how creative you are, how good of a listener you are to me. And that is how I'm going to decide who I'm going to do business with. Look, you know, any smart businessman is only going to allow a few qualified vendors to show. So we already know the product is qualified, if you will, for the most part, okay? So really it's now some of the finer things. And as we all know, I'm a big fan of Bob Berg. Know, like, and trust trumps everything. Trumps any feature and benefit. It just does. Know, like, and trust. So what better way to allow prospects to get to know, like, and trust you, than to create this landscape, this canvas for your brain to express itself in sales and in business. No better way. Certainly a PowerPoint hides who you are. You may not have written it, very constrained. I don't really get a sense of who you are. I get a sense of what your marketing department approved. And so now you're making it difficult for me to decide to work with you. So I think that this falls in line on every level, whether you're in small business or big business. Cut the PowerPoint cord, learn how to whiteboard sell or white paper sell or blackboard sell or write on the wall, and go to whiteboardselling.com. They have a blog. They've got some great posts on that blog. Doesn't matter if you're in small business or big business. I think you'll take away some really good points there. And I want to thank my guest, Corey Summers, for joining me on Selling It Like It Is. I really appreciate the insight, and maybe we'll have you back and talk about some advanced concepts, or maybe get some stories from some small business people that have started to use whiteboard selling.
Would love to.
My pleasure. Thanks very much. As always, I am Stefan Lubinsky, your host. This is Selling It Like It Is. I hope you've enjoyed. Stay tuned for our next episode. Thanks for joining us. Take care.
You've been listening to Selling It Like It Is. For more information about Stefan Lubinsky or to subscribe to this podcast, visit smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.